China is more and more competitive because its economies of scale keep on growing.
Germany is just such an amazing case study in self-destruction.
Yes, absolutely.
They came out of the Second World War, and yes, there was a bit of argy-bargy then, but they had coal.
Yes.
And they thought, okay, well, we need to diversify into nuclear.
Yeah.
And from the eastern half, they had a lot of Russian oil flow, Russian cheap
oil
energy
and gas.
Flowing
yes.
in, yep, into the eastern half. So after reunification, they had to think about this and said, well, let's get rid of the coal, because that's a bit smelly, so we get rid of that. And so we just have the nuclear and the energy that's flowing in from the USSR connections. And then they thought about it a bit more and said, right, let's get rid of the nuclear and go all in on Russian energy. And then they got rid of that as well.
Well, the Americans blew up Nord Stream using the Ukrainians.
That. Yes.
Meaning that energy was crippled, and VW has been talking about layoffs since last year. This is from 28 October 2024.
Of course, Germany had such a head start because, following the Industrial Revolution, Germany for a long period of time had some of the most advanced industrial areas in the world.
The whole Rhine Valley, the Ruhr area, it was ridiculously rich.
Well, and with the Ruhr, of course, I mean, a lot of that was sort of power generation.
Yes.
And Germany just shows how you become an industrial superpower. You get as much cheap, abundant energy as you possibly can.
Yes.
And then you can do stuff, especially if you're conscientious like a German. You can get stuff done.
There is no prosperity without cheap energy and cheap food.
Yes.
Like, the keys to prosperity are cheap energy and cheap food. Who are the enemies as far as the EU, the Liberals, and the British government are concerned? Cheap energy and cheap food.
Yes.
So basically, this has been a long-time suicidal policy, but now it's getting considerably worse. And you have to remember that after the closures of Volkswagen plants and after the layoffs in Volkswagen plants, there was a political effect. So in North Rhine-Westphalia, one of the key industrial areas of Germany, that and Lower Saxony, the SPD, which was the traditional strong party in the area, pretty much collapsed. The center-right, the Christian Democrats, did okay. But the AfD tripled its share of the vote from around 5% to around 15%. And this was the result of this stupid economic policy. And you see this dissident vote in Germany growing, and one of the things that the AfD wants is reconciliation with Russia, reasonably enough, because that is critical to restarting the German economy. And now they're struggling with electricity costs because they have the higher electricity costs in Europe.
I'm surprised it's not us.
Aside from Britain.
Oh, okay, fair.
Aside from Britain, like in the EU. Aside from Britain. And then the Europeans decided to seize a Chinese chip maker that was based in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But the company was in the Netherlands, the manufacturing was in China.
Right, so they actually just seized the administrative and marketing bit.
Exactly, and so the Chinese said, right, we are banning all exports then from the chip maker that you just seized.
Which is a reasonable response, really.
Which is a reasonable response. And the consequence is that Volkswagen has stopped producing its electric vehicles.
But isn't Germany one of the countries that has an EV mandate?
Yes.
Okay, right.
And they are full-on committed to expanding electric vehicles, and Volkswagen made massive investments. And in the previous round, in 2004, they announced that they were shutting down three plants. Now they've shut down another two factories that mainly build electric vehicles, because now that the chips from the Chinese are gone,
yes,
they have to go through the whole testing and configuration of new chips, and they have no idea how long this is going to take.
This is just German government all over again, isn't it? It's like step one, introduce EV mandate. Step two, launch trade war with China and get all of your EV chips turned off.
Yes. Well, you're not characterizing this correctly.
Right.
Step one, shoot yourself in the foot.
Yes.
Step two, scream about your foot hurting. Mm. Step three, blame the Russians.
Yes, and then shoot again.
And then shoot again.
Yes.
So, like, in terms of the order of things, first, you start by doing an enormously destructive policy. Then you complain about the consequences.
Mm.
That's what you do if you're.
I remember the first year of the Russia thing, where they decided they're going to shut off all the Russian energy.
Yes.
I mean, this was even before Nord Stream got
yes.
got blown up. But they shut off all the Russian energy, and then it was like, oh shit, how are we going to get through the winter? And they spent something like, oh, it was a ridiculous, it was like 5 trillion euros they spent
on. I don't think that. They went absolutely insane trying to fill up their storage tanks in the summer of 2022.
It might have been like 800 billion. It was some enormous number.
That sounds
reasonable. And I remember at the time working it out, it would have been enough to build so many nuclear power plants, they could have had basically free energy for the next 30, 40 years.
They are engaged in industrial sabotage at the behest of the Americans, who are laughing all the way to the bank.
Yes.
Because every time this kind of thing happens, they end up... Firstly, American car companies do better, especially under the tariffs. And secondly, Europe becomes more dependent on the United States.
Well, now
and that's
Germany's
been the
getting
constant
a lot of its energy
theme
from
of the Ukraine war. Yes, exactly.
Mm.
That's been the constant theme of the Ukraine war. You are damaging your own economies, and then you are paying the Americans for the privilege of destroying your own economies.
So I've got to say, as an economist, if I simply looked at the economic data,
yes,
and not any of the narrative, any of the battlefield stuff, I simply looked at the economic narrative, I would be convinced that the Ukraine war was a war of America against Europe,
yes,
specifically Germany.
So I've been arguing this since Trump took over, that the policy, in fact, is to consolidate control over Europe more and more effectively.
Mm.
That the objective of the Trump administration isn't to beat China, it isn't to beat Russia. Really, the actual objective is to make sure that Europe and Latin America, the parts of the American empire that must remain parts of the American empire, are fully under control.
Yeah.
And if you look at what they're actually doing in terms of the trade deals that they're making the Europeans sign, von der Leyen said that she had no choice but to sign that trade deal, which accepted enormous new American tariffs on Europeans and had the Europeans commit to buying $750 billion worth of energy from the United States in 4 years. I think the total production is something like $200, $300 billion. Mm-hmm. So they can't physically buy that much because all of that, a lot of the stuff that's produced is accounted for to sales to other countries. And they committed to investing $600 billion in the United States. And now with what's changed with the Ukraine war is that the Americans are no longer giving weapons to Ukraine. The Europeans are buying the weapons and sending them to Ukraine. So the whole policy is designed to bankrupt Europe. And the Europeans, because they have Putin derangement syndrome just as badly or twice as badly as they have Trump derangement syndrome, are okay with it.
So that's a good plan.
If you're the United States.
But it wouldn't work unless the Europeans basically went along with it at every stage.
Which they do.
Yes.
Because of the Putin derangement syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think that losing their industry and fighting a war to the last Ukrainian is less damaging than having a coffee with Vladimir Putin.
Mm.
Because he's Putler, you see.
Yes.
And he's the incarnate, like he's the current year demon, as opposed to Hitler, who was the eternal demon.
Mm.
That's the mindset that's animating them.
I've always had an opinion that a lot of the financial incentive to basically throw taxpayers' money into Ukraine as much as possible is that it's chips on the table for the people calling the shots in Europe to potentially make money for themselves and their friends and allies in other industries, or get, you know, hand out contracts and then get favors out of office
if you want to do this and make money for your friends, some of your friends have to be industrialists. That must include Volkswagen and Siemens, both of which are getting screwed. And then you would use these car manufacturers to make tanks instead of cars, or armored vehicles, or missiles, or something. But if you're bankrupting your actual industries, then even that isn't working.
Oh, I'm sure the way it's going to work is the money is never going to leave the US.
Yes. So
what happens is the Europeans will take out debt from the United States, and then that money will be used for US defense contractors. Then the goods will be sent from the US to Ukraine, and the cost of it, so jobs are being created in the US or being sustained, and the debt and obligation is being created there as well, and the Europeans are just going to funnel money to the Americans even more so than they already do.
Essentially. I mean, when Trump says you have to pay for protection, That's what's happening.
Yes.
The sensible thing to do is to get cheap Russian energy and build weapons and maybe reduce your freaking welfare bill. Two-thirds of the people on welfare in Germany are, you guessed it, foreigners.
Yes, I can believe that.
So they can cut their welfare bill by two-thirds just by being a bit nationalistic, but that would remind them of Putin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Germans are weird about nationalism these days.
Yes. So the Germans are saying that it wasn't the sanctions on the Chinese company that sort of paralyzed their production, and they're saying that the pause in production was pre-planned.
I don't think so.
But I like
tough sell.
I'm not aware of many factories that decide on short notice that no, now we're going to stop producing.
It's a very short-term business strategy,
yes,
isn't it? Ideally, you want to produce as much as possible for as much profit as possible.
You'd think so.
Fair, the energy cost is probably a bigger factor.
The energy cost, well, if you don't have the chips to put in the car, that's it.
Yes.
But the energy cost, you have to remember, they say that they are 25 to 50% above their targeted costs. You're 25 to 50% above the cost that you're aiming for, that means that you're going to go broke.
Well, because you can't make any profit.
So there's a reasonable case to say we're going to shut down production,
yes,
and take the L until we get cheap energy.
Yeah, because, I mean, in car manufacturing, that would wipe out the entire profit margin and then some.
Yes.
So you'd be selling them at a loss every time.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So they're basically falling apart.
Also, didn't recently, I mean, Volkswagen asked for something like $10 billion to keep going.
Yes,
I think so. The German government turned around and said, "Okay, well, look, fair enough. We're going to give $11 billion to Ukraine."
I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, I think. Is it?
Well, the Germans would say so, I guess.
And this is Volkswagen that's falling apart. This isn't any old company.
Well, he's got the big man's name on it, isn't it? I mean, that was his.
Exactly.
Yes.
There are two engines to the German economy, Volkswagen and Siemens. Yes. These are the engines of the German economy, and they're sort of interrelated. So if Volkswagen does badly, then Siemens is going to sort of suffer, and so are all of the other manufacturers. Well, and we saw that all of the car manufacturers are suffering. But hold on. If you're losing both, or if... it's not just that these are the engines of the German economy, it's that the German economy is the engine of the European economy.
Yes.
And you're in a situation where France is facing a debt crisis, which is the second biggest economy in Europe, and Italy is a basket case, and Spain is a basket case.
Greeks aren't doing too well either.
But they're small, and they're manageable. So there is a scenario where you can bail out Greece as many times as you want to. There is no scenario where you can bail out France once.
No.
And if German industry falls apart, France will follow.
I mean, that they probably can't bail out Spain, let alone France and Germany.
Exactly.
Not a hope in hell. I should also give an honourable mention to the chemicals industry, which used to be 30% of the German...
manufacturing sector.
It's synonymous with their economy, isn't it?
Well, yes, yeah,
more or less.
And the way that chemicals work is you get a whole load of precursors and then an enormous amount of energy and you end up with chemicals. But the enormous amount of energy is the key thing. And, of course, when the cheap Russian energy was turned off, that just became unviable.
You can't have a chemicals industry without gas. Like,
yes.
Gas is not just the source of energy, but it's also a major input.
It can be a precursor itself, yes.
It can be a precursor itself, exactly. It is a precursor itself. And if you buy that by LNG from the Americans,
yes,
you might as well give up.
Yes.
And relocate the plant to America.
I mean,
promised to invest $600 billion in America, so Uncle Trump is going to come collecting.
Yes. This is like the end of a very unfortunate game of Monopoly where you're having to mortgage everything over to the person who's got you.
Yes, thanks for that.
Yes.
In case you haven't watched it, check out our Lads Hour from last week.
I like that one.
with a Monopoly game, okay, in case you haven't seen that. But to add insult to injury and to make everything even worse, over 2 days, three refineries, one in Romania, one in Hungary, and one in Slovakia, blew up.
What, within a three-day...
In Slovenia.
Within a three-day window.
Within a three-day window.
What a terrible coincidence that is.
And they were all supposedly undergoing maintenance when they blew up. But they have one thing in common, which is that they all receive Russian energy.
Oh, what a remarkable coincidence.
Yes. And...
Well, I think I don't think we need to look for foul play here. I mean, that's obviously a wild set of coincidences.
Yes. It is completely accidental, I'm sure. Right. It has nothing to do with the fact that one of them is owned by Lukoil and the other two receive Russian gas. Right. And it has nothing to do with the fact that Hungary and Slovenia have been resisting cutting off all Russian energy.
So nevertheless, I feel the need to ask, was it a Ukrainian team or a US black op team?
Well, if I had to guess, yes, I would say it was Ukrainians on the ground under American command.
Yes, that does make sense.
If I had to guess, because there's no way, I mean, as you pointed out when we were chatting, given the risk of triggering Article 5, like this, there's no way that this would have happened without American authorization. And so as the Americans try to put pressure on Russia to end the war on the current front line, which the Russians would never do because the current front line is collapsing and the Ukrainians are falling to bits, they're trying to apply more and more economic pressure by basically stopping Russia from selling its oil, except that oil is a fungible commodity. And there's no way you can actually stop Russian oil. If you can't stop the Iranians selling their oil, you cannot stop the Russians selling their oil.
Weren't they sending a lot of their energy to India, and then the Indians were reselling it to Europe as well?
Pretty much. Point, yeah. They were refining it and selling it to Europe.
Now we're just buying Russian oil with an Indian markup.
Yeah, yes. It's been washed by the Indians.
So what ends up happening here is that they go and sell the oil to the Saudis.
Yes.
And then the Saudis sell it on. Because the Saudis will always want to help the Russians evade sanctions for a very freaking obvious reason. If you can sanction Russian oil, you can sanction Saudi oil. Mm. And the Saudis will have zero tolerance for that, because that means that the Americans can kill them whenever they want to. And so every country in the Gulf that is a large exporter of oil has an interest in thwarting the American plan. And that's exactly what they've been doing. The Saudis stopped using their own refined oil to sell on their domestic market. They started refined diesel, to sell on their domestic market. They started buying Russian diesel and selling their diesel onto exports.
That makes sense.
Meaning that everybody was paying the Saudis a markup.
Yes, I mean, that makes sense, because you can't tell the difference in oil, because Saudi crude is quite light and Russian is quite dense.
There is a difference between them, the quality of the crudes.
So if the Saudis stop using their own, we're going to export 100% of that, and then we're going to make up the gap with cheap Russian energy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the Russians will offer this deal to everybody who produces oil, and everybody who produces oil will say yes, because if you can sanction Russia, you can destroy Iran, you can destroy Iraq, you can destroy Saudi, the UAE, all of them are on their heads are on the chopping block next. Mm. So they're all going to help the Russians. So they're going crazy about India, the Americans are. It's important, but it's never going to actually solve the problem. And if you think about Russia historically, who are the people who have the most ability to endure massive amounts of economic and physical pain and keep going? Well, it's the Russians.
Well, they did it for 80 years perfectly fine. So,
exactly.
Yes.
I mean, Kissinger keeps on repeating the point that nobody can bear suffering more than the Russians. Mm. So to think that some economic difficulties are going to stop them is a bit absurd. All that this is doing is destroying the European economy.
Well, and if the German, like suffering there, is it?
If the German economy is collapsing, and all of a sudden three of the biggest refineries in Europe get blown up, you can imagine that this has a cascading effect, because, like Hungary, a huge amount of Volkswagen's equipment and products are actually built in Hungary, and in Slovenia, and in Romania. That was the benefit of the EU to them. They could sort of disperse their factories to lower cost centers, and Hungary is perhaps one of the biggest ones for them. So attacking Hungarian energy means that the impact is felt not just by the Hungarians, but also by German companies. And if it's felt by German companies, it's felt by the rest of the EU economy.
The weird thing for me in all of this is it's blatantly obvious what's happening here.
Yes.
And so it must be blatantly obvious to the people running Germany and the other EU countries,
yes,
the UK and so on.
It's just nothing they can do about it, is there?
There's nothing. There is a lot they can do about it.
But nothing they're willing to do.
But there's nothing they're willing to do about it. Because somebody has blackmail material on all of them. I mean,
Yes.
I mean, the Rent Boys story...
It's not an accident, is it?
It's not a, you know...
Yeah.
Is it an accident that they were Ukrainians? I don't know.
I mean, this is something I noticed for a long time. If you are of unpeachable character, such as myself and Beau,
yep,
you get screened out before you even get to run for Parliament.
Yes.
You're not allowed to get to the top unless you're the type of person that they've got something on.
Yes. That is very much the case.
Yes. And actually, there is plenty that they could get me on. They just didn't bother to look for some reason.
Anyhow, so now European refineries are being treated by the Ukrainians in the same exact way that they're treating Russian refineries. They're attacking Russian refineries regularly. The good news is for Europe that these refineries are very robust and tend to be easily repairable or repairable within a manageable time frame. But the fact that you're treating European refineries in the same way that you're treating Russian refineries... Whilst you're giving them money, shows the nature of this war and the consequences of this war. It's been much more destructive to Europe than it is to anybody else.
It makes a lot more sense that Trump did a U-turn about ending the war in Ukraine, doesn't it, when you realise that carrying it on weakens Europe and increases American power over us.
Yes.
Somebody sat him down now that he's president and showed him the Area 51 stuff and then said, by the way, it's not actually a proxy war against Russia, it's a proxy war against Europe.
Yep. More or less.
And look, that we cannot allow anything to happen to the dollar. Before this was happening, the dollar as a share of international transactions was going like that, and the euro was going like that. And it's like, no, that cannot be allowed to happen. The dollar has to remain sacrosanct. So if we launch a proxy war against Europe and dress it up as a proxy war against Russia, we can take out the Europeans.
More or less.
Mm.
More or less. So yeah, you're paying for these weapons and your refineries are getting bombed in exchange. And I don't see how this gets resolved in favor of Europe. Because you have to remember that as the European economy breaks down, one of the key questions is going to be the welfare state. Well, because you've imported a bazillion Bobalians, when you cut them off welfare, which is going to be the main political demand for anybody who's sane, that you cut the welfare for the foreigners before you do it for the natives, they're going to riot. And all of your money is going to have been spent trying to fight a land war against Russia, a feat at which Hitler and Napoleon both failed. And they were both imminently more qualified militarily than anybody running the show right now. So there is this recklessness involved in this. And what does Trump do on the back of this? Well, he imposes more sanctions on the Russians in order to make it harder for everybody else to acquire energy while the Americans get all the cheap energy that they want. And I would expect the Americans to start slapping Canada now at some point, because it's too close to China, and to make sure that the Canadians are sending their energy to the Americans as well, bringing down the price for the US further.
Well, there has to be very strong incentives for the Canadians put in place, otherwise they could trade with Europe because they can produce a fair amount of energy themselves.
Well, most of their assets are geared towards the other side of the world, which is why slapping them around and blowing up some of their stuff might convince them to redirect it. The Canadians have become too close to the Chinese, essentially. And this whole story of them cozying up to Europe, I mean, they don't have a military. So they're going to be punched in the face in the same way that Europe is being punched in the face as part of this American consolidation. This is the actual story here. Whatever residual sovereignty Europe has is being ripped to shreds.
And it's not like even being good vassals helped them. They're still getting, they're being good vassals and still getting screwed.
Yes. Yes.
Hmm.
And all of this is intended to stop a situation where the Germans and the Russians say, let's split Central Europe between us and stop fighting. Which would arguably be the best thing possible for the peoples of Central Europe. Like, you take the Orthodox, we'll take the Catholics and the Protestants and be done with it. Which is how Europe used to work.
Could work like that again, though.
Say again?
It could work like that again, though.
It could work like that again.
The right people with the right political will.
Yes.
We can turn this around.
Yes. It can be turned around. So, yeah, that's Ukraine punching you in the face again.
A bit unfortunate, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Head on over to lotuseaters.com to find out more.